Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, part-time Brendan behind the glass 2 days in a row for Brendan. Not bad, not bad, Brendan. What's that?
It's going to be quite a few days in a row.
That's good. I'm glad
progress
that you're working.
Is being made.
Are you guys going to mention when it's like 20 days in a row?
No free lunches. Earn your pay around here. That's great. Whenever Brendan does come back, though, because he misses a lot of days, when Brendan comes back, we stand, we applaud him, we give him an ovation, we say that if he ever gets traded to Brooklyn and then Philadelphia, that we would gladly welcome him back. If that ever happened to Brendan.
Do we?
Yeah, I think so. I think if he left to Brooklyn, big market, you know, he demanded a trade there, went to Philadelphia, rejoined, you know, maybe Todd goes to Philly to be a GM at a station in Philly. He goes there to reunite with Todd. He gets out of work because he gets, you know, too fat. He gets too old. He comes back to work with us. I think that we would welcome Brendan Riley back to the Killer Bees. We would welcome Brendan Riley back to Houston.
I think it depends on the day and how desperate we were.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Like if somebody came in and was better than Brendan.
Yeah, then we might say, hey, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah.
But I mean, if we had a guy that was kind of half-assed in it and didn't care a lot, maybe then we would say, hey, Brendan, we'd love to have you back.
Now, I think the real question here is, Brendan, do you have your jersey retired in strip clubs in Houston? Do you have them in the rafters of strip clubs in the city of Houston?
Uber Eats, he does.
He does have his, DoorDash, Uber Eats,
that's right.
Postmates.
He has a jersey retired at Uber Eats.
He's got NFT jerseys retired.
He's got a VIP card.
James Harden was back in Houston yesterday. The Rockets handed James Harden what the Texans could not hand Deshaun Watson. A big, fat, double OTL. James Harden first came back in like 18 games, gets an L in his return to Houston. He says he loves Houston. He likes it in Houston. He got an ovation at the game yesterday. People were happy to see him. And when James Harden comes into town and then he leaves the town, maybe this is a way to talk about the Rockets. I don't know. But people start to think about James Harden eventually reuniting and returning to the city of Houston and being with the Houston Rockets for a second term.
Why? Why in the freaking world would you sports fans in Houston of sound mind and body want that to ever be a consideration? For the most part. Okay, bear with me a little bit, okay? I'm going to fudge it a little bit. But here's the thing. We talked about Deshaun ad nauseum yesterday, and we talked about it where we could possibly temporarily separate the incidents off the football field with the fact that it all started with him wanting out. And when someone doesn't want to be with you, and I've said this before, it's like a relationship. You want to be with her. You don't want to be without her. You can't do without her. But if she doesn't want to be with you, or she decides, okay, for the time being, I'll stay, you have to be smart enough to realize that is not conducive to long-term happiness. And that is not what you want, nor are you need. And you're better than that. Houston is better than that as a city. This guy said to you after you kissed his ass and met his every wish and desire for 8 straight years, including having his jersey hung in freaking strip clubs and freaking the red carpet rolled out all over the place. He basically decided the first sign that it wasn't going to be sunshine and rainbows, that he didn't want to deal with this anymore, and it was your responsibility to find him a new home where he wanted to play, and so be it, let it go. How in the hell does that deserve a freaking standing ovation or an ovation or any kind of cheering at all?
I'm okay with the ovation, to be honest with you. Like, I can understand that you appreciate James Harden, the success he had with the Houston Rockets, which I can understand you can argue. You can argue about that success. What did James Harden lead you to?
He had individual success.
He did. I mean, the Rockets
had team
success.
We made the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, I mean, that's not nothing. Like, people, we live in a society where it's championship or bust. I understand that. It's never been more championship and bust in our lifetimes in the history of sport. So I get that. I understand that. I respect that. But I also, I'm going to give credit to a team that's going to Western Conference Final after Western Conference Final, nonstop playoffs, especially in a city where we're living through a Houston Texans rebuild and a Houston Rockets rebuild. Did they get the ultimate prize? No. Should James Harden be docked in terms of greatness points for that? Yes. But I'm not going to just dismiss and ignore that the Rockets did have team success when James Harden was here.
So we work with a Philly fan that now, and I was saying to you as we were setting up in here, it's amazing that when he becomes one of your guys, one of your superstar players, how defensive you are of him and how protective you are of him. But if you've been through and lived through the James Harden era, you realize it was all about James Harden. It was, I need more shots. I need a different sidekick. I need this. I need that. You need to do this. I don't worry about me, but to the Western Conference Finals that I was as close as anybody during the run there,
yep.
I witnessed the guy that set the record for turnovers in the biggest game of that series. I witnessed a guy that, like Verlander got criticized for here, was a guy that no matter how much he had regular season success, he failed miserably in the playoffs, and a lot of times he looked like he didn't give a rat's ass that he did, nor did he want to do anything to fix it. And so that's one thing, because you roll with him, because he still has your city on his chest, and he represents your team. And like you said, they were doing some things. But the fact was, when push came to shove and the rubber hit the road, this dude was ready to bail on you as quick as he could, and he was ready to duck and hide and place the blame on others whenever he shouldn't have. And so those are all things that led up to, when the grass wasn't greener, him going to the Rockets and saying, it's time, I want out. And that's why that is a cowardly, meek approach that I can't get behind, and that's why I won't support him when he comes back.
Understand that. I understand that, and I'm okay with that. Like, I'm not going to say that you should be fanning a certain way. I'm not. I wouldn't give him a standing ovation. Like, I'll be completely honest with you. I didn't really love the James Harden era. I called him James Hardashian for a good period of time when he was dating Khloe. I felt that Hardashian cared more about himself than he cared about team. He cared more about brand, name, image, likeness, NIL than he cared about overall team success. I always said that James Harden will never be the best player on a championship team. And I think that we can go ahead right now and say that that's already true, because James Harden's not the best player in Philly.
No.
If James Harden wins a championship at some point, he will not be the best player on that team. So James Harden will go down in history as a guy who, we don't even know if he's going to win a championship, but if he does, he wasn't the A player. He wasn't the alpha. He wasn't the top dog.
Right.
So I can understand not giving him a standing ovation. I don't mind the people that do give him a standing ovation. Where I draw the line, though, is the idea that James Harden should again be a Houston Rocket.
Oh my God, Lance was going off on it this morning. I almost ripped off my steering wheel and punched out the windshield. I'm like, at least John was like, no, I don't need to see that again. I'm like, this team definitely needs a veteran presence in the locker room. The last type of veteran presence they need is a guy that's in the Hall of Fame of strip clubs and going out all night and drinking with a steel liver, trying to get guys who don't have a steel liver to keep up with him. I need a veteran that needs to teach these guys how important it is to play team basketball at the right moments, to understand how to run systems on offense and defense, that's happy to be there instead of an Eric Gordon whose body language says, I'm constipated and I'm hungry and you're not doing anything to feed me. I just... James Harden would be the last guy on the planet that I would want to come back to Houston.
Same. For a lot of reasons. For the reasons that you laid out off the floor. Like, if you're bringing back a veteran that wants, you need a veteran to help out the youngsters, be pros, elevate their game. I think that the one recent example you look at in the NBA of a young, rebuilding team that needs the veteran to go to the next level would be Chris Paul when he went to Phoenix, when he helped out Booker, when he helped
Great
out
example.
Ayton. Yep. And all of a sudden you had a team that was winning 25 games, all of a sudden becomes a threat in the Western Conference. That is a leader. That is somebody that you can bring in. And look, sometimes Chris Paul is tough love, and I understand Chris Paul rubs some people the wrong way, but he's a pro, he elevates players around him, and he's kind of a pass-first point guard.
Yep.
James Harden has always been about James Harden. The off-the-court issues would be a huge issue with a team that's very, very young and has Kevin Porter Jr. on it on top of that. Secondly, like, I don't trust that James Harden's intentions whenever he comes to the Houston Rockets is to play, like, second fiddle and take a back seat to Jalen Green, which he would need to do. I think James Harden would want the spotlight back and kind of take the glow off Jalen Green and honestly hurt his development. So off the floor, it's a no-brainer. On the floor, I don't view James Harden as the elder statesman, the veteran that's going to help groom young players and elevate their game to be better players and elevate the team to be better overall as well.
I like your Chris Paul analogy, and let me go to this one as well. James Harden also, because I believe in what you said, and I've always said the same, which is, he would never be the best player on a championship team. Now he's never going to be the best player on another team again, unless it's a really bad team. And the fact is that at his age and his body type, I won't even say he's fat anymore because he's worked a little bit more on his conditioning because he knows he's playing for another contract. But his body isn't in the kind of shape that it was in when he was able to do the things he was individually. But on top of that, Carmelo Anthony, he is the type of guy that as he gets older and he's dealing with these things, in his mind, still believes he's the best offensive player on the floor, which means he's not going to give the young guys the ball, which means he's not going to go to the bench and play a six-man role ever.
Uh-huh.
He's going to be Carmelo Anthony, who believes he's still top five in scoring and first-team All-NBA when he's barely hanging on to a roster spot. And that is a dangerous situation for any team, let alone a team that's got all these 19, 20-year-old kids you're trying to develop.
You think Harden's going to take a sweetheart deal, a hometown discount?
No.
Do you think James Harden's going to live up to the value of the dollar?
No return on investment either. Nope.
No. I mean, it doesn't make sense off the court, doesn't make sense on the court, doesn't make sense in the front office,
Jeremy,
when you're talking dollars.
People said he left money on the table. He did them a solid last year. No, he didn't, because the rest of the league's value of him was completely skewed in a negative direction compared to what Philly gave him.
He did a favor based on the timing. He did a favor based on the timing. That way he cleared up the money off the books for a moment. And it was kind of tampering. I think Morey got in trouble for it too, right?
I don't know if he actually officially got in trouble, but everybody knew what Daryl was going to do.
713-780-ESPN. Do you give James Harden a standing ovation? Would you be okay with James Harden returning to Houston? 713-780-3776. The HRMP listener line. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Also, I'm telling you right now, Texans fans, do not fall into the trap of wanting quarterback at number one. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
0754 on, would you want James Harden back with the Rockets? No, 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 no. On James coming back, 713-780-ESPN. I think we know where 0754 is at. 713-780-ESPN. 5180, Chris Paul is the major reason the Rockets reached the Western Conference Finals. Okay. I mean, James Harden was good. Chris Paul was good. Whatever. That argument, not really interested in having. Now, if you're trying to bring a veteran back, no on James Harden. I mean, Chris Paul's already too old, but that's the type of veteran you need, especially at that position, because I think that the Rockets would be really situated nicely if they brought in like a legit veteran point guard that's more pass first.
Distribute first. An old school point guard.
Yeah, because there's moments when Kevin Porter Jr. Comes into games when Jalen Green's cooking, and then Kevin Porter Jr., like a little bit of Russell Westbrook-ish, and I'm not calling Kevin Porter Jr. the talent of Russell Westbrook. I'm saying the decision-making, similar to Russell Westbrook, where you have Jalen Green that's absolutely cooking. Shingun's getting it going, and Kevin Porter Jr. comes into a game like 10 minutes into the fourth quarter, and he's like, you know what? I haven't scored lately. I'm going to take the ball out of their hands, and I'm going to try to score myself, which drives me nuts.
It was the toughest game for me to watch last night, because as much as it was score-wise a very, very competitive double overtime game, both teams were sloppy. But just, again, watching the Rockets play, too many careless turnovers. Too many times where you use your skill set to get your defender behind you only to let them recover because you're going to circle back around and shoot a 35-foot fadeaway three. Everybody that touches the ball once it crosses half court, whoever's got it, it's like, okay, it's your turn to shine. Everybody get out of the way. He's going one-on-one, or he's going to create for himself. He's going to isolate. That is not conducive to winning basketball games. It might be conducive to showing you have talent, but talent can only take you individually so far, especially when everyone is trying to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. And that's where I get so frustrated with the fact that this team does have talent, but no one's developing it, and no one's trying to get them to understand, in order to be successful and take the team to the next level, you have to understand when it's time to play team ball and truly when it's time for you to operate.
That's why he's not a point guard. That to me is why he's a six man. Like, I think he would be a microwave off the bench, honestly. Like, you bring him in.
I agree he's not a point guard.
There you go.
But I also think that, again, it's an overall team personality
that
has to have an attitude adjustment.
I don't disagree with that. I think the Rockets have been playing better lately. I think it's evident in their last seven games. They went 3-3 in the road trip. They beat a good Philadelphia team in double overtime. I kind of hate the fact that they're winning basketball games, because I want Wembanyama. If I don't get him, I want Scoot. And this is the last year that you have your first rounder. Now, they do have some lottery protections with the first round pick going forward. Like, I think it's top four protected for OKC. So it's not that you don't completely have a chance to also capitalize on those picks, but like, this is the last year where, hey, get a top three spot, top three lotto balls, hopefully you hit big, and then you kind of soar. Maybe you bring in a new staff, things like that. I agree with the overall philosophy of like, hey, take it more serious. Like, be a little bit more careful with the basketball. Try a little bit defensively. Try to get a stop every now and then. So I agree with that stuff, but I do think that the talent level of this team is starting to show. by their wins. Now, I think if they added the stuff that you're talking about, and I think it's probably a process, it's not going to change overnight. It might need a new staff. It might need an overhaul there, where if all of a sudden they're taking care of the basketball, all of a sudden they're trying to get stops every single time down the floor, plus the talent, because we have seen the talent take a step up. Mm-hmm. They're 4-3 in their last seven games. The Rockets have been dreadful the last few years. So the talent's starting to rear its face, which is good. But you're right about the other stuff. I think that's what it's going to take to like reach the next level. To be a playoff caliber team, they're going to need all of that.
See, and the thing that really frustrates me is you mentioned Chris Paul. Chris Paul, no matter at what age, is also open to hearing what coaches have to say if he's not getting something done correctly.
He's a savant of the game.
Yes, and he's also a guy that understands from an old school perspective, the coach is still in charge, and I need to listen to what he says. I can't tell you how many times, and Brendan always wants me to peel back the onion a little bit. Well, I can't tell you how many times that James Harden came in fat on the Kardashian diet and was struggling mightily, shooting less than 25% from the floor, and then instead of coming in and for extra shots and looking at video and trying to figure out what he was doing wrong, he would go to the coaching staff and say, you need to call more plays for me. I'm not getting enough touches to get the numbers that I need. And they all started to like shake their head, waiting for like someone to chuckle so that they could know that he was kidding. And he was dead serious. Like in the playoffs, when the trade deadline's passed and you know you have no chance to do anything other than take the team you're with to the next level, and he would call the head coach over and the owner and say, I need help. Go find me someone else that we can get out there. And they're like, you do realize the trade deadline's passed, right? We're not doing it. He goes, well, then you better start drawing up a few more plays for me. It wasn't always about you like he wanted it to be, and I think the reason why they were held back from getting further as a team mm-hmm. was because he was too self-centered to open up to the fact that Chris Paul might know better than me or might be able to catch me, tell me where I need to do better or change something. And instead, I was defiant because this was my team. I'm the best player on it, and no one can tell me more than I already know.
He also disappeared in some big spots.
Oh, the San Antonio game.
Game 7 Western Conference Final, Game 6 Western Conference Semi, San Antonio at home.
Refused to shoot for the first quarter and a half.
Yeah. Clippers come back in Game 5, and Mikal refused to put him back into the game.
And that's what got Mikal fired.
So, yeah.
He was so ticked, and Mikal knew it. He's like, I knew the minute that I decided that he was going to sit, and this team that got us back in this game was going to finish the game. I was having beers with him at the hotel after the game. And he goes, the only thing I have to worry about now is that James will never forget this, and he will never let me forget the fact that I didn't bring him back in the game. And he goes, from a basketball purist perspective, I can't punish the guys that were on the floor that got me back in this ball game and make them sit because I have to kiss James's ass.
Yep.
And the next season, James got him fired.
That's what the NBA is, though. Like, if you're not doing that to the star, you're going to be on the unemployment line.
Right, because unlike in college when they need you, and it's changed now with NIL and everything else, but it used to be that in college, athletes need the coach because they need them to take them to the next level and get them prepared and have an opportunity. When you get to the NBA, when most players in the locker room are making more than you are,
yep.
and the owner has to make a choice, 10 times out of 10, the coach is going to go and the player is going to stay.
Yeah. Even in college game, though, like you might get frustrated with your situation, but it's not going to be the coach that goes. It's going to be you entered the transfer portal.
Well, now you can,
whereas
right.
Whereas the NBA, it's like you're going to get a coach fired. If you're the star, you have more sway and pull and power than the coach does. There was also that James, like this is one of the underrated James Harden plays that I always point to that no one else does. And it was like early in the playoff runs for the Rockets, it's when they had Dwight Howard. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it was a series against Golden State. I don't think it was it wasn't the Western Conference Final, but it was like the first couple of years where they made the playoffs and they're down 2 points, final seconds of a game against Golden State. James Harden comes up the floor. It's like, okay, he's your best player. He's about to take the shot. He passes to a trailing Dwight Howard behind the three-point line.
I remember
that. And in that moment, I said, James Harden, all the assists, whatever, that's cute. He has zero basketball IQ, and you can't win with that guy. If you're the best player on a team, you're down by two in the final seconds of a game, and you're passing the basketball to a trailing Dwight Howard, you have zero awareness, zero sense of how to play basketball, and I was done with Harden in that moment. And it was a long time ago. It's a really, like, very, very, you know, obscure. It's a nitpick, I understand, but I think I was right.
Well, and I saw too much, like, even at practice and things like that. The fact that it's one thing to say that you're going to do what you do after games and in between games in a playoff series or otherwise, even in the regular season, but then to make sure you take several others with you and basically teach them what the don'ts of how to be a professional on the next level in the NBA,
mm-hmm.
and then have that carry over to the playoffs. And on top of that, realizing, like you said, in the Dwight Howard era, you don't have to go out for drinks and dinners and movies with the second best player on the team. But in order to be successful as a team, you need the second best player. The last thing you want to do is go back to your old recess days and say, you're either on Team James or Team Dwight, and be so petty that if someone from Team James saw someone that supports Dwight Howard fall down at practice, if that Team James player tried to help him up, James would rip him a new one. And the fact that if either one of those guys went down, they would look at the other one and basically laugh that they fell down and wouldn't help him out. And that's a team that got to the Western Conference Finals. You tell me if that wasn't in existence inside that locker room that they couldn't have gone farther.
Yeah, exactly. Keep me away from that guy.
They had a 16-point lead in game one. Dwight Howard then ended up tweaking his knee and they lost game one. And then James Harden had the turnover festival later. They were in that series that first year.
Yeah, a lot of negative plays for Harden. A lot of positive plays, a lot of negative plays. The end result was almost good enough. KJ, NBA is run by the players. College basketball and football is run by the coaches. Josh and Beaumont, Harden only cares about himself and his beard. Brandon T, please no reunion with Harden. That would be the dumbest move the Rockets could make. Eric the Driver, I'll always have a bit of a soft spot for Harden just because he was the centerpiece of the first Rocket team that was alive for, that was legitimately competing for a championship. I'd give him an ovation, but no chance in hell do I want him coming back. 713-780-ESPN. Let's get into the quarterback conversation. Don't fall into the quarterback at number one trap. I beg you, and I have the reasons why. 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, well, I'll tell you right now about my good friend Doc Linville. Look, I was telling the guys at the gym about it today. Doc Linville is a game changer because of the fact that he can change your hairline and he can get you hair back where you thought you will never have hair again. You have those bald spots or those thinning spots when you look in the mirror every day and you think there's nothing I can do about it. I got to shave my dome or I got to try all these sprays and creams and foams that don't work and just mask the problem. There's a solution for you, and it's your own hair. It's called the Neograft procedure, and they do it right here in Houston. I think Doc Linville and his staff are the best at doing it. They actually take hair where you have it and are never going to lose it, and that's particularly in the areas of your sides and your back. And even guys that are bald will always, if they just let their hair go, have that kind of hair. They take the follicles from those sections and move them to where you need them most. You can turn your 8 head back to a 4 head. You can get the hair back on the top of your head. And you know what? It's your own hair. It grows. It blends. It's the same exact color. It does everything that the rest of your hair does. And in about 6 to 9 months, it is going to be as thick and as strong as the rest of your head of hair, and it's never going to go anywhere. The thing that got me was 95%+ of the follicles moved, stay, and grow, and are with you for the long haul. That was the game changer for me. If you want all the information, if you want to ask questions and get the answers and see if it's right for you, as an ESPN listener, you get a free consultation with Doc Linville and his staff that normally costs $150. You get it free. Just go to 975hair.com. Ask all those questions. Get all those answers. See how long the process takes. See how long the actual recovery time. Any talk about the recovery, the payment plans, all the different things you might have questions about, including that success rate, you might be the next patient that gets in line to get the procedure done and you can reap the benefits too. I love the fact that I did this and I would recommend it to anybody. I'm recommending it to you. Check them out today, 975hair.com. Go see my friend Doc Linville.
I don't draft quarterback number one of this year's draft for a variety of different reasons. Mentioned it yesterday on the show. Don't draft Bryce Young. There's a lot of reasons why I believe that. One of the things I talked about yesterday was I think that Caleb Williams is a better draft prospect. And if you feel like you're going to, if you're worrying about the future, you should be looking at the best player and figuring out a way to get the best player. I understand there's risk there. I understand there are not guarantees there. There aren't guarantees to anything. There's risk to everything. Drafting quarterbacks number one overall over the course of the last decade haven't necessarily been something that you can hang your hat on. Those things have not been guarantees either. I did a deep dive here, Blankers, about drafting quarterbacks with the top five picks. I did a deep dive with how every winning team right now in the NFL, every team with a winning record 2022 regular season in the NFL, how they were constructed and how they acquired their quarterback. I went back over the last decade and looked at Super Bowl winning teams and how they acquired their quarterback. Where would you like me to start? Would you like me to start with the teams with winning records in the NFL, how they acquired their quarterbacks? Would you like me to start with Super Bowl winning teams for the last 10 years? Would you like me to start with recent draft history of quarterbacks that have been taken in the top five?
I just want you to start.
I don't even know where to start. There's so much information here. But 713-780-ESPN. The premise is don't fall into the trap of drafting a quarterback at number one. The overlying thought I have here, Blankers, mm-hmm. is that if you look around the league, if you bring a quarterback into a lousy situation, and by a lousy situation, I mean maybe you don't have the coaching staff that is well-equipped and suited to handle a franchise quarterback. If you have a bad team around the quarterback that you're drafting as a rookie, if you have lack of skill players or an offensive line that can protect him, you're setting that rookie up for failure, and it's difficult for any player, no matter how good they are, to have success in those situations. I believe with where the Houston Texans are as an NFL franchise, I believe that if you draft a rookie quarterback right now, that you are setting that rookie quarterback up for failure and that it would be difficult for them to have success. If you look across the league, you look at quarterbacks on winning teams, usually it's not dudes who've been drafted in the top five. Usually it's not even dudes who you drafted, period.
Okay. The thing to me is I keep going back to, you know, our discussion yesterday and you bringing this up, and it's a great topic to kick around because unfortunately, you're in this position because at least you have your draft picks. But I keep comparing it to the David Carr inaugural season of the Texans type situation. And we all know that David Carr got the football version of PTSD and he was never the same, and they ruined him, and he was gun shy and all those things that, you know, was career changing and altering for him. I don't see the same situation if the Texans draft a quarterback this year, because I think that they have the luxury of not only, aside from the number one overall pick, but another first round pick and several other high draft picks of continuing to add to a team that has a running back, mm-hmm. that has an arguable number two receiver and maybe another one if Mechie, you know, God willing, is healthy and everything works out for him. And then whatever you're going to do with Brandon Cooks.
Do you believe that Mechie and Nico Collins, though, is what you would call a wide receiver core that is good in the NFL?
No, because I think they're going to still take another one of those high draft picks, okay. and they'll get another weapon.
So they go rookie quarterback at one, they go Johnston, the kid from TCU, at 13, wherever the Browns are.
Either at 13 or somewhere in the first two to three rounds, they're going to get another receiver, I believe, and they're going to look for one of the better ones.
Okay.
And then I think that from an offensive line perspective, I believe they're going to bring Tytus Howard back, and you have Tunsil. And I believe it's a better offensive line than the hot garbage we saw for decades with the Houston Texans, especially with the David Carr era. So I don't think that it's like rock bottom from the offensive perspective, just in basically stating, I guess, aside from anything else, it's not going to be a David Carr situation where he's just going to get lambasted play after play after play.
I actually don't disagree with anything that you're saying.
Okay. So, and then the other thing that I was thinking about after we talked about this, and then I saw you know, tweeting last night too. And my thing is, it doesn't necessarily have to be, because you make valid points too. And the thing that concerns me is Bryce Young's only 180 pounds. And you know, you get 200-some-odd pound linemen that meet at the quarterback. It's one thing if you're 6'3, 6'4, and 2-something. But if you're Bryce Young, it's like taking a grade school kid and let him get run over by Aaron Donald sometimes. It worries me. But then I look at Stroud and I look at Levis and I look at some of these other guys and I go, you know what? The main thing to me is I don't want to focus just on Bryce Young, though I personally like him the most. But if, like you've brought up very astutely with Caserio, he's more of a big, strong, physical quarterback type that he prefers. Maybe there's one of those guys in the draft where it doesn't necessarily have to be 1-1 overall, but you can use a first-round pick. You can get a guy. And then you'll have a better roster around him, because whatever you don't take at 1-1 is another player that adds to it.
Yeah, I don't really disagree with a whole lot of what you said. I believe that if you drop in a rookie quarterback, one that you're hoping is going to be a franchise quarterback, into a lousy situation, that you're setting up that rookie quarterback for failure. And I have some examples for the rest of the league that we'll get to in a second. Mm-hmm. Now, the way that you draw it up, I think, is like the optimal solution for if you go Bryce Young. Because, look, as much as I'm, you know, anti-drafting a QB number one, I'm not anti-Bryce Young. I like Bryce Young. You know this. Yep, I think yep. The Hive that listens to us on a consistent basis knows this. I would be really excited for a scenario where you draft Bryce Young, you go Quentin Johnston with the Cleveland Browns pick, and you bring in an offensive mind. I would be fired up about the direction of the Houston Texans. Now, I can believe that, but also think it's not in the best interest long-term of the Houston Texans getting the most wins for the next decade. And that's where I stand on this. Because look,
And I want to hear what you have to say, but the one thing I forgot to say that I do want to throw in there, because mm-hmm. you and I have been so draft focused, they do have the money in free agency too. Ugh. If they don't get everything they need out of this draft class, if they know that, hey, with this bringing in a franchise quarterback, I got to have another guard. I got to have a, you know, you and I both talked about, they need to find another center.
It's like yes or no on that, because I think if the Texans wanted to go find the money for a center and a right guard, they could do that. They could find the, you know, finances to have center or right guard. And I know everybody loves to point to the cap space that the Houston Texans have in the offseason. They have a lot of cap space, but they have 39 players under the roster. So, like, it's a little bit inflated because you're going to have to fill a roster. So, like, I think that at times people in this city talk about how much cap space the Houston Texans have and kind of overrate it because, yes, they have cap space, but they also have a lot of bodies that they have to bring
in. To their own. Yeah, I would just say, like, you know, just without going and saying,
sure,
you know, big splash name.
But I think, yeah, they could do
center,
that.
Guard, tight end. Now you've got a legitimate guy that he could throw to that we don't really have right now.
And to your point, like,
and center, better blocking.
And to your point, center, right guard, tight end. Like, you don't necessarily have to spend a first rounder to improve drastically in those spots. Mm-hmm. So I understand that. 0-3-4-0, Myles Garrett and the Browns haven't done anything. That is a horrible example, because tell me what Baker Mayfield has done for the Cleveland Browns. Like, Myles Garrett has been a really good football player that makes that defense go and makes that defense a threat. Whereas Baker Mayfield, they hated him so much that they got rid of him quickly and then used three first-round draft picks to trade for, at best, a sexual pervert and then paid that dude $240 million. So Myles Garrett would not be the example I would use, and the Cleveland Browns would not be the example I use when you're talking about what does a defensive player at number one do for that organization. And honestly, I'm more of the trade down than best player available when you're talking about this draft. But if you look at teams right now in the NFL that have winning records, just winning records in the NFL, because that's what the Texans are aspiring to do, right? The Texans want to have a team that's a winning team. The Texans want to have a team that hopefully can get back to the playoffs at some point. Buffalo Bills, we'll start in the AFC. Buffalo Bills drafted Josh Allen 7th in 2018. Do you know how they acquired the 7th pick in 2018? They traded up for that pick in 2018 after they made the playoffs. They already had a team around the quarterback position that went to the playoffs with Tyrod Taylor. We saw what Tyrod Taylor looked like with the Houston Texans. The Bills had a roster that was able to get to the postseason with Tyrod Taylor, and they drafted Josh Allen 7th. Not a top pick of the draft, not a top 3 pick of the draft, not a top 5 pick of the draft. They traded up to number 7 after they already made the playoffs. Kansas City, what you would call a winning team. They drafted Pat Mahomes 10th in the 2017 draft. You know how good Kansas City was before they drafted Pat Mahomes? They won 12 games the previous year with Alex Smith, won the division, and then when they redshirted Pat Mahomes for a year, they won the division again. So the Chiefs were already a very good football team when they traded up to get Pat Mahomes.
Here's my problem with this whole idea. Duh, Jeremy. I was saying this from the beginning, and so were many other people. What you should be trying to do in football is get good.
Sure.
You should be trying to get good. And if you miss out on a quarterback because of that, you figure it out when you get there. That has been my belief from day one. If you happen
When did anybody argue that, though? No one was arguing with you that the Texans shouldn't try to get good.
No, the argument was you should try
and suck. No, that was not the case. If you thought embrace the suck was to try to not draft well,
then you
missed the boat on that.
No,
entirely.
I'm not saying that, but you guys have argued that there's no value to winning, and I've been saying from day one.
There's not value to winning. Getting better doesn't mean winning. The Houston Texans right now are a better, more talented roster than they were last year, and they have three fewer wins. The Texans have more
talent. That's not fair. The quarterback is worse.
What do you mean that's not fair?
How is it worse?
It's the same guy a year later
in
his career.
You think Davis Mills has played as well today, this year, as he did at the end of last year?
No, I don't.
So their quarterback play has been worse.
Sure, but it's the same guy. Why is it worse? Because the team is terrible and the coaching staff is awful. You're proving my point without knowing it. To elevate a rookie quarterback, you need everything around him to be better. Last year, Davis Mills, as a rookie, played better than Davis Mills as a sophomore. Why? Because his offensive coordinator was better and he had better targets to throw the football to than sophomore Davis Mills.
See, but I think when you look at it, too, he didn't have a running game a year ago. You got a running game now. I think that it's so important to just be able to evaluate getting the right guy. I think that we knew all along, more than anybody was willing to admit, Davis Mills wasn't the right guy. No matter what he showed last year, we kind of expected and set you up for what we're now living through with Davis Mills right now. But I think that if you get a guy that can truly play in this league, and you give him Dameon Pierce, and you give him the receivers, if Brandon Cooks was bought in, Brandon Cooks still has ability, and a halfway decent offensive line, I think this would be a better football team. But I think, Brendan, to your point, short term, the obvious solution to follow the plan was to embrace the suck.
But to embrace it to get good. Like, you were right, never, you were never drafting it inferior to get,
but
players.
But the idea that good teams pick at the top of the draft is silly. That's not how it works. If you get good, you will not have top picks.
Sure. But if you get good, that's when you bring the quarterback in.
But see,
that
no,
has been
you
my,
could also
my thought all along.
Okay, I don't understand like what the argument is here though. 713-780-ESPN. Don't fall into the quarterback at number one trap. 713-780-3776. I have other examples of this, whether it's teams right now, whether it's Super Bowl champions, whether it's quarterbacks at the top of the draft. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, don't fall into the trap of quarterback at number one. Baltimore, winning team in the NFL, Lamar Jackson, pick number 32 after they were 8-8. Decent situation. Tennessee, they traded for Ryan. They fired their GM today. The dude that traded for Ryan Tannehill in 2019, they traded for Tannehill after going 9-7.
You know what he didn't do? He didn't keep A.J. Brown, and he torched him.
Mike Vrabel was not too pleased about that either. Nope. The New York Jets, winning team right now. What did they do? They just benched the quarterback that they drafted number 2 in 21. Philadelphia, Jalen Hurts playing like an MVP. Second rounder. When did they draft him in the second round? A year after making the playoffs. Minnesota traded for Kirk Cousins after they went 13-3. Dallas drafted Dak Prescott in the fourth round. San Francisco drafted Trey Lance third in 2021. Many people didn't think he should be starting. He got hurt, replaced by Jimmy Garoppolo, who the 49ers traded for, and now they're starting Brock Purdy and believe in Brock Purdy after he was literally the last pick of the last NFL draft. The Giants picked Daniel Jones sixth. A lot of people don't like Daniel Jones. In fact, the Giants don't like Daniel Jones to the point where they didn't pick up his fifth-year option.
I think he can play a little bit.
But you don't think that he's a top-10 quarterback.
I'm not saying that.
Exactly.
No, I'm not saying that.
Exactly. Seattle signed Geno Smith in 2019. Washington signed Taylor Heinicke to the practice squad and traded for Carson Wentz. Those are the winning teams in the NFL. The two ones that I left off are the ones that I think people would use as a counter-argument. First, the Miami Dolphins. They drafted Tua. Now, they drafted Tua fifth. By the way, not first, they drafted Tua fifth after going 5-11. But Tua was literally asking himself in the mirror last year if he sucked. He didn't think he was any good until the Dolphins did what? They helped him out by trading for Tyreek Hill and signing him, by drafting Jalen Waddle. And then the biggest reason for Tua's success so far is they brought in the psychiatrist as an offensive mind, Mike McDaniel, who's one of the best offensive minds in football. Tua himself thought that he sucked until the Dolphins helped him out. Cincinnati might be the biggest counter-argument to this whole conversation. Don't fall in love with a quarterback at number one. They drafted Joe Burrow first in 2020 after going 2-14. He missed his rookie year, by the way, after tearing his ACL. They drafted Ja'Marr Chase to pair him with T. Higgins, to pair him with Joe Mixon.
He missed part of his rookie
year. But I think it was most of it, right? Didn't it happen early in the year? I don't think he played much.
I want to say it was more getting towards the mid-season.
And he wasn't
point.
Very good in his rookie season.
I think
they took off, obviously, in the second year.
Yeah, he showed signs, but I think that, again, a lot of people were like, to your point, but that
you're
making
10 games.
Too,
that's more than I thought.
Yeah, I thought.
Now,
was,
they were 2-7-1.
But I also think he showed enough that people were like, going back to the David Carr analogy, they're going, why the hell are you putting, and to your analogy to some degree, why the hell are you putting this guy out there right now when your offensive line is a sieve that's going to get him permanently damaged? Remember when he went down, people were like, this is what we're talking about. He may never be the same coming back.
People were mad whenever they drafted Chase. Over
because
Penny
they should have
Sewell.
Taken offensive line.
Yeah, yes. Which turned out to be the right decision.
I was one of those guys that said Cincinnati needs to focus on protecting their franchise quarterback. They didn't listen to me. They got his number one option as a wide receiver in college, and it turned out to be a great move, and I was wrong.
Every winning team right now in the NFL did not draft their quarterback with a single-digit pick, with the exception of Daniel Jones, who the Giants have already declined his fifth-year option.
For Josh Allen.
Seven. Yeah, that's right. But they traded up for him after the playoffs. You're right. Josh Allen's another one. Tua was talking to himself in the mirror last year saying, I suck, wondering aloud if he sucked until they brought in Tyreek Hill and Mike McDaniel. And then Joe Burrow, he won two games his rookie year before he was hurt, 2-7-1. They brought in Ja'Marr Chase. They brought in an offensive mind. The Bengals took off. If you want to look at the last 10 Super Bowl champions on top of this, Rams. Traded for Matt Stafford. Now, I understand Matt Stafford was a very high draft pick, but the Rams traded for him. Yeah. He didn't win in Detroit. He won in L.A. Bucks, they signed Tom Brady. Chiefs, Pat Mahomes, they traded up for at number 10 after they were a winning team. Patriots, of course, drafted Brady in the sixth round. Eagles signed Nick Foles. Some people might push back and say Carson Wentz there. He was the number two pick. Carson Wentz missed the last three games of the regular season. Did not play at all in the postseason. I can't put a Super Bowl championship on Carson
Wentz.
But
he was an MVP till he got hurt.
He was. Did he win a Super Bowl for the Eagles? Well, he has a ring, well, but did he help him win a Super Bowl?
But did he help it? That's a different question.
And I understand the argument there. Patriots drafted Tom Brady in the sixth round. Broncos signed Peyton Manning. Patriots drafted Tom Brady in the sixth round. Seahawks drafted Russell Wilson in the third round. Ravens drafted Joe Flacco 18th overall. The last 10 Super Bowl champions, there has been nobody drafted, no quarterbacks, with a single-digit pick.
We had this conversation before the season and early on, and you were on the
I don't understand why you're
trying.
Okay, like new information, change your opinion. I don't understand why you're so hung up on the conversation, though.
How many teams have won the Super Bowl since the season started, Jeremy? Zero.
There's been 10 Super Bowl champions in the last 10 years. You can learn. You can educate yourself. You can become knowledgeable. I don't understand why you're so hung up on the conversation when the point is that the Houston Texans shouldn't be married to the idea of drafting a quarterback at number one when they are the worst roster in the NFL.
Because the whole value I was sold on, the reason that you were supposed to be rooting for them to lose games from week
one.
For the record, things change. Things change when you're right here, right now, because it is evident how bad this team is. But going into the season, my hope was that the team was not as bad as they are.
Brendan, I have our mantras right here for the offseason. Joel said embrace the suck. You said build one strength. My mantra was collect draft picks. How do you collect draft picks more optimally than anything else? You have the top pick of the NFL draft and you trade down because the top pick has more value than anything.
Then when do you take a quarterback?
When you're good. That's the whole point.
See, here's the thing more than this, and I think that a lot of the skepticism towards agreeing with you, Jeremy, is the fact that everybody is, if this wasn't Bryce Young you were talking about, if this was some bona fide big 6'4", 200-some-pound, the second coming of a Josh Allen type, I think a lot of people would be even more adamant that you got to go get that guy. I think the bigger thing to me is, and being in this from a different sport perspective, I think you have to have really savvy, really, really good personnel people and talent evaluators. And I think that you have to have, and Daryl used to do this better than anybody, and you and I have talked about this, a top 100 player list. And it goes further than that in the NFL. It goes 300. But you have to, with a fine-tooth comb, scrutinize every single player to realize, regardless of position, this is the guy that we believe is the best, surefire, can't-miss whatever he plays.
Yeah.
And then go on from there. And if Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud and Will Levis and all these other guys, if they aren't capable and worthy of being one of those top five guys, then you have to trust your intelligence to be able to make a very, very unpopular decision.
Obviously, all of this stuff matters, right? But, like, let's say Bryce Young and Will Levis, a lot of people don't like Will Levis because he's not flashy, didn't win a Heisman, plays at Kentucky, not Alabama, didn't have a great last season in college football, where Bryce Young does all of the opposite things. If you said that Bryce Young and Will Levis are equal heading into the NFL draft, a lot of people throw rocks at you and say, no way, Will Levis is equal to Bryce Young. But whatever situation, if they are even, whichever situation they get into, whichever one is better, is going to make that quarterback better than the other one. If, for whatever reason, Pat Mahomes tore his ACL, not available next year, and the Chiefs drafted Will Levis, and the Texans had Bryce Young, who's better? Levis is going to have better results than Bryce Young. It's not so much about the prospect and the player. Sure, it matters, but it's more about the system. It's more about the team they're going to. It's more about how everybody else is going to bring that quarterback up. The quarterback position is the most important position in the NFL. You could say it's the most important position in sports, but it's not the NBA. If you sign LeBron James and you put the seven dwarves around him, they're probably going to be pretty good. Now, with the Lakers, they've been awful. But you bring the Greek freak, seven dwarves, they're probably going to be pretty good. If you have the best quarterback in the world and you put the worst player in the NFL at every single position around him, that team will be lousy. The NFL is so important about the rest of the team, the rest of the players around him. The quarterback position is not an independent variable. It's a dependent variable, and it's lifted up by whatever else is around that quarterback. So it matters a lot if you're drafting a rookie quarterback to already have a team that's good, established, up and coming, and you will reap the benefits of going with that rookie quarterback.
But the situation matters, too, in the fact that it's the most important position on the field, and in this specific situation, you've got two guys that you already know – you can close the book on in terms of being considered as a franchise-type quarterback or
see, I don't think that should be in the conversation, though. Like, if you're looking at the next decade for the Houston Texans, I don't think what you're getting out of Davis Mills and Kyle Allen should affect what you're doing in the draft.
No, but what I'm saying is you got to have someone at the quarterback position that is capable of taking you places, and they don't right now.
I would agree with that. So, Even with the idea of, like, skipping quarterback at number one, I want to trade down, but if you go best player available, I agree that there needs to be a new quarterback.
There has to be a new quarterback, and then it's like, to your point, you're right. You can have the greatest quarterback on the planet, but if you don't have the right pieces around him, you're not going to be successful like you want to be successful. But if you don't have a quarterback at all worth a crap on your roster – even if you have the best roster around those guys, you're not going to be successful.
No, you're not going to be successful in 2023. But I'm not worried about the best version of the team in 2023. I'm worried about the next decade.
I know
decade.
There's no guarantees, but you have to have some kind of way to guarantee you're going to get that guy. And I think if you pass on it and you build up the rest of your roster, your chances, you're right, you're going to have to trade up.
Yeah,
but
that's
there's too many variables that are uncontrolled because of the fact that you have to have a team that's willing to trade with you to move up, or free agency is probably not the way to go.
Probably not.
I have an important question for that reason. With the accumulating draft picks, you're prepared to do the opposite
if
and
you
go
need
get
to.
A quarterback.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because once you feel your team is capable of contending is when you go get the quarterback. You don't put Bryce Young on the worst roster in the NFL and expect to be good. Nobody can do that. The best quarterbacks in the world couldn't do that.
My biggest pushback, I don't even entirely disagree with that.
Do that. Josh Allen couldn't do that.
My biggest pushback with that is I don't think that there's a one way to build a football team. There is a one way to build a basketball team. If you can't get a superstar at the top of the draft, or I guess there's two.
I mean, I just listed out the last 10 Super Bowl champions, and there hasn't been a single dude, a single quarterback on a Super Bowl champion with the exception of Eli Manning. You can even push back Eli Manning because Eli Manning was not actually drafted by the Giants, but I'll give you the Giants drafted Eli Manning.
There hasn't been
not
a single one
starting quarterback. No.
But don't you think with the Josh Allen argument, though, that he got better?
Eli Manning was not a winning quarterback in the last 10 years. The 10 quarterbacks of Super Bowl champions the last 10 years, not a single one of them has been drafted with a single-digit draft pick. The last one to do it was Eli Manning, if you concede that the Giants drafted him. That was way back in 2011. If you look at Super Bowl-winning quarterbacks in the last century, it's only been done twice. Eli Manning and Peyton Manning. Those are the only two quarterbacks in this century that have been drafted with a single-digit draft pick that has won the Super Bowl for that team. Period. End of story. Fact. That's it. 713-780-ESPN. I also want to take a look at the last decade of top five quarterbacks taken in the draft and see if you would sign up for any of these dudes. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.